This is episode 340 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, July the 11th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, I'm Andrew McCollum and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Once again, Australian consumers have the ACCC, the Australian Competition and Consumer Watchdog, to thank for keeping the telcos in line that are big on misleading. And once again, Australia's number two telco, Optus, has had its wings clipped over recent broadband ads found to be just that. This isn't the first time Optus has been caught out misleading consumers, so one has to wonder if this isn't common practice. They've already been hauled across the coals over the cap plans and misuse of unlimited, and now they've been taken to task over those supersonic and think bigger ads. After the peak allowance was depleted, the consumer would not get the benefit of any of the remaining off-peak entitlement at broadband speeds. ACCC Chairman Graeme Samuel sums up the matter by saying, "This decision sends the clear message that misleading consumers is not a legitimate business strategy. The entire telecommunications industry needs to sit up and take notice." Recently, the federal court found that Optus hadn't clearly explained that those who went over the peak or off-peak data allowances would have their connection shaped to 64 kilobits per second. The federal court has also ordered Optus to pay $5.26 million in fines in addition to corrective advertising, allowing affected customers to exit contracts without penalty, and a court-appointed injunction on specific advertising from Optus on the issue. The decision prompted a public apology from Optus chief Paul O'Sullivan, but naturally he claims the company never received complaints from customers over the advertising.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The dust is still settling on Final Cut Pro X. The ACCC wins its biggest telco fine ever. Virgin Australia has capability to use mobile phones in flight, and Qantas points out the problems with lithium mobile phone batteries. Facebook launches video chat with Skype, more on Google+, and Adam Turner takes a look at the longevity of DVD and Blu-ray with the evolution of streaming media and download services. But before we get into this week's Tech Talk Radio, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
Week on Tech Talk News, Facebook's awesome announcement. Optus is fined $5.2 million for misleading advertisements about its broadband internet. Tiger Airlines is grounded over concerns for a navigational database in its Airbus A320s. Hackers infiltrate the Fox News Twitter stream. And the space shuttle Atlantis leaves Earth for the last time. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Facebook has announced a new partnership with popular video chat service Skype to bring video conferencing to the world's most popular social network. The so-called awesome announcement was made by Facebook CEO Mr. Mark Zuckerberg on Tuesday last week, who said the feature will begin rolling out immediately and should be available to all users within a few weeks. Mr. Zuckerberg said the best part of the new video chat feature is that users don't have to set up a Skype account. Facebook is using underlying Skype technology built into Facebook and made available to Facebook users with a small download. The announcement comes only a week after Google launched its competitive Google Plus social network with inbuilt support for text, video, and voice chat, with up to 10 users simultaneously through a feature it calls Hangout. Facebook to date has only ever offered text chat between users, and the new Skype integration only offers one-on-one video connections at this time. The federal court last week fined Optus $5.26 million for misleading broadband commercials. The case was brought against Optus by the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission and is the highest ever penalty for a consumer breach. Federal court judge, the Honourable Nye Perham, said the principal purpose of the financial penalty was to act as a deterrent to Optus and a deterrent to others who might be tempted in the belief that misleading advertising was a profitable strategy. Here's Chairman of the ACCC, Mr. Graeme Samuel, on ABC Radio last week.
Optus had two advertising programs. One was the Think Bigger one and the other one was called Supersonic, whereby they advertised high-speed broadband with certain limits, certain caps, both for peak and off-peak. What they didn't indicate, except in small print, was that when you exceeded the caps, then you were effectively reduced to 64 kilobits a second broadband speed. 64 kilobits a second is hardly even broadband. It's not speed at all.
Optus says it's disappointed by the decision and it never intended to mislead its customers. Optus is still deciding whether or not to appeal the decision. Australia's Civil Aviation Safety Authority has grounded domestic budget airline Tiger Airways after two incidents in which aircraft flew below the lowest safe altitude into Melbourne airports. A preliminary report by the Australian Transport Safety Bureau has shown that errors were due to an incorrect lowest descent altitude in commercial navigational databases installed in Tiger's aircraft. In one incident, according to the ATSB, although air traffic control had cleared the Airbus A320 to approach a runway at Melbourne Airport at 2,500 feet, the navigational database allowed the aircraft to descend to 2,000 feet. The error wasn't corrected until air traffic control contacted the flight's pilots by radio. The Chief Commissioner of the ATSB, Mr. Martin Dolan, spoke on ABC Radio last week.
We look at the whole range of things to work out where it's not working as well as it might be and to make proposals and recommendations for improving it. So our aim is for improving the system overall rather than looking at whether a particular operator is in compliance with the rules and procedures and so on.
The other incident involving Tiger Airways occurred on Thursday in a similar approach to Avalon Airport. Hackers have infiltrated the political Twitter account of Fox News in the United States, tweeting that President Obama had been assassinated. Hackers sent six tweets on Monday last week saying that President Obama had been shot at a restaurant in Iowa. But the incursion wasn't noticed by Fox News and the tweets remained public for about 10 hours from 2 a.m. Washington time until about 12 midday. Fox News later removed the tweets and described them as false and malicious and said it regretted any distress the tweets may have caused. The account has about 37,000 followers and the hack is now being investigated by the United States Secret Service. And Atlantis has taken off from Cape Canaveral for the last time, bringing an end to NASA's 30-year-long space shuttle program. Despite a 70% chance of thunderstorms and rain, shuttle mission STS-135 took off on Friday with a year's worth of supplies for the International Space Station.
2-1-0 and liftoff, the final liftoff of Atlantis on the shoulders of the space shuttle. America will continue the dream.
Houston now controlling the flight of Atlantis. Space shuttle spreads its wings one final time for the start of a sentimental journey into history.
Atlantis, negative return.
Negative return.
The 12-day mission will end the space shuttle program and Atlantis will join Discovery and Endeavour in retirement. Private companies will now take over the business of getting space station cargo and crews into orbit. I'm Dr. Ron and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, I suppose we should start off with the big news of the week.
I actually like this. This is one of the things I don't like about Facebook.
Ting. When you first load up the app, it ticks the thing on again.
That's all.
You've got it ticked off.
Graham, have you got a hose?
It's all right. I fixed that.
Now, Cash nerded on Twitter.
Drive-by nerding.
Which was very, that was quite unnecessary. I felt quite put out.
What is going on?
This was a cold and calculated attack designed to wipe a business and its customers off the face of the earth.
No,
it's
good for radio.
Who wrote that?
I was just a blogger that I read.
So glad I'm not in high school right now, aren't you?
Yes.
No, go away.
What is it against Pi that some people have?
Media Composer. That's a name I've heard before.
Yes, he's not on the
nothing
chat
to worry
tonight.
About. No.
It's going to be awesome.
Prepare thyself.
It is.
Get it? Awesome.
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 You heard it first.
Well,
hey, thank you very much.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here at the microphone with Dr. Ron, Dr. Graham, and Dr. Lena, all in this evening. It's a cacophony of doctors. How are you all?
Good. We're just hanging out, if you know
what
I mean.
Yeah, we are hanging out, aren't we? This is new. This is the Google Plus Hangout. So Adam Turner's just joined us in there. So if you're a new Google Plus convert and you're in a group, come and say hello to us. We're still working it out, so don't pester us too much on there. But there's, I can see Adam there.
You need to
Have
find,
you got yours going yet?
Yeah, almost. You need to find Andrew.
Prepare.
No, I know. You need to find Andrew first, if you're listening to us live.
I can see you on my screen. Oh, there's...
And you need to follow your nose. He's got a little link there that says, hang out with me, or something like that.
Yeah.
Google Plus stream. So have a look at that.
Yes. How are you going over there, Graham?
No, I can't get it to work at all.
You haven't got a Mac, though.
Do I need a Mac to do this?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Lena can't, because she's got an Apple thingy over there, and it just won't.
Well, Google Plus and the iPad aren't getting along too well at the moment.
Google Plus and Google Apps aren't getting along too well over here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not just restricted to any particular manufacturer then.
Oh, no. The following pages have become unresponsive.
Uh-oh. Ruh-roh.
Kill pages. If you're listening to us live,
Jason's just joined us. Sorry, we're very distracted.
Go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. That's the best way, I think, to communicate with us in the circumstances.
And we're actually playing with new toys tonight, so if we sound a little distracted, you'll know what it is. Anyway, this is Tech Talk Radio.
And if you're not listening live, go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au, where we have all show notes and all discussion topics from every show.
Absolutely. Anyway, Dr. Ron?
Well, thank you to answer your question.
That's good. You're on delay too.
Yes.
So if I ask you, have you got any correspondence? I should wait a few moments,
wait
talk
a few
about
moments,
something else, and then come back.
And then I'll say, we've got plenty of correspondence.
Oh, have we? Excellent.
We've also got a bit of a follow-up, too. Dr. Ron and Lena's prediction from last week of an automated Windows-enhanced superior online marketing engine fell a bit short.
What's going on here?
We were speculating about what Awesome stood for.
Oh, yeah, it did fall a bit short, yes.
Yeah, all it actually
was. Did you have
to
go back to the podcast to actually find out what you said?
No, I'm pretty sure that's what I said. No, I'm lying. No, I went back to the podcast.
Yeah, about to say.
And we were speculating about the awesome Facebook announcement, when in actual fact it was a bit ho-hum, I think, in the wake of the Google Plus announcement.
It was a tad, wasn't it?
But Facebook
it was bound to be after all the hype.
It was. But Facebook has partnered with Skype. You don't have to have a Skype account. You don't have to be a Skype user. But they're using underlying Skype technology in Facebook now for chatting.
Yeah.
But you can only still chat like video and voice and text chat one-on-one. Whereas the thing that we're trying out tonight, which is the Hangout feature in Google Plus, lets you have lots of people.
There's three that I can see. Jason Warlock down there, bottom right of my screen. Hello, Jason. He's in Sydney. And then down the other left-hand side is Adam. He's over the other side of town here in Melbourne. And where are you, Dr. Ron? I saw you there briefly for a moment, but you've disappeared. Do I have to scroll to find you?
I'm right in front of you. Is that a trick question?
No, not on my screen, you're not.
Oh, I'm not on your screen right in front of you.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute.
Adam's bored already. Can you see?
Join this hangout. I'll try again. We'll see what happens. It told me to get my hair right and put my lipstick on before.
Anyway, this is Google Plus that we're all playing with here at the moment. So it's, I don't know, if you need an invite. The invites are back, I've noticed, too, on the right-hand side there. So if you need an invite, send us an email and we might use some of ours up. Have we got plenty left?
We've got plenty left,
good.
It's a bit frustrating for people, and we've been getting a lot of requests, and we're trying to invite as many people as we possibly can.
Yeah, I sent a few off the other day.
Yeah, but sometimes Google is, they're turning off the invitations, and then they'll leave it for a few days, and then they'll allow them again. So it's just a matter of timing. You have to be in the right place at the right time.
Adam can see Dr. Ron, according to my screen.
Oh, hi, Adam.
He's texting there. This is all pretty cool. I got the volume turned down because we're doing radio, and you never know what might come out the speaker of my laptop here.
It's bad
Could
enough.
Be awfully embarrassing.
Bad enough when we're controlling and vetting everything, let alone if we actually...
Oh, look, I can see Dr. Ron now, too. He's there. This is pretty impressive software.
I can't see Dr. Adam Turner can see Ron. I can see that Adam Turner can see me. This is going to make for a very boring radio show if
it
we
is.
Keep on that.
We should... We should keep going. What? Back to the correspondence.
Oh, correspondence on delay, yes.
On delay.
Carl via the Tech Talk Radio feedback form says, hi team. Hi Carl.
Hi Carl.
I thought you might be interested in this. I've had a Telstra Big Pond Movies membership for some time now using their DVD by mail rental service. This has been a great service for renting movies cheaply for the kids, as well as Blu-rays for my wife and I. I specifically rent Blu-rays as I have a large plasma and a dedicated movie room at home. Apart from this, I have no other services from Telstra. Today, however, I detect a change in tone of voice here by Carl, I received an email from them stating that the DVD by mail will be ceasing in September, but that I can still get my movies from them by getting a T-Box
or streaming/downloading by computer.
Yeah, they get more.
Oh, lucky me, says Carl. Given I don't get my internet from Telstra, like many of us, I don't have a wide Ethernet connection in the theatre room, and streaming can't come close to Blu-rays yet. I agree, Carl. I find this a case of Telstra trying to railroad customers into their T-Box streaming service. Perhaps they have visions of being a powerhouse like Netflix in the US. But until the NBN's rolled out and most of us have reliable, fast fibre optic internet, I find it incredible that Telstra would abruptly stop the DVD service, especially for HD and Blu-ray content. I'll be switching to QuickFlix for my Blu-ray rentals shortly. Looking forward to the next show,
Adam,
Carl.
Adam has a very interesting piece from the couch tonight all about physical media, Blu-rays, DVDs, and all this. Exactly what was in that email that you just spoke of.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for the feedback, Carl. Oodles on the forum.
Oodles?
Oodles of noodles?
Why do you titter so?
With poodles?
Oodles of oodles with poodles. Says, hi, everyone. While catching up on last month's podcasts, plural, brief mention was made about a router that allowed you to specify time limits by MAC address.
Yeah.
Can anyone identify the router? My router isn't that smart, and I would like to limit after-hours use by my teenage son. Any help appreciated. Thanks heaps. Oodles.
I mentioned that. I've got one of the new modern routers. When I say modern, it's probably a couple of months old. I'd have to get back to you with the model number because I can't remember which one it was. Because I have a couple of routers, either at work and at home and places like that. But I think the one that I'm talking about, the 604T, which is... I have to check it, but I think it's that one which will actually let you enable devices to connect in at any particular point in time. So, but you should be able to check it in the manuals of the routers, and they're all online. So just go to the respective manufacturers and have a bit of a look. But I think it was either the 604T or one of the newer ones which I've got.
And who's the manufacturer? Did you say?
They're all D-Link.
All D-Link.
Not a plug there, but yes.
Yeah, there you go. Have a look at the D-Link models.
Got a Netgear one, but I know it's not that.
Okay, Netgear won't do it. Or the model Netgear you have
no,
won't do it.
No, won't do it. Won't do it.
Any suggestions, Graham? Do you use that feature with any of your customers, limiting like connections at time of day by MAC address or anything like that?
No.
A MAC address is a unique address that a device has. And yes, that's what the Wi-Fi people...
It belongs to the network port on your device.
When Google went sniffing, that was what they all were up in arms about, because people didn't know how many Apple devices you had in on your network when they sniffed. Remember that?
People who leave their networks wide open.
Yeah.
Them's should the be ones. Aware that that's what happens.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Gerard, via the Tech Talk Radio contact form, says, hi, guys. After just listening to the podcast where the joys of Google Plus were being spruiked, I'm keen to try it out. Could you please send me an invite? Oh. Gerard, there's one on the way. It's one in the mail, as I say, one in the Gmail. I don't want to run the risk of falling prey to one of those fake sites. The circle idea sounds like a great improvement over Facebook groups. On your program and also on the website, you mentioned there probably being room for two major social networking sites.
Maybe.
How quickly we've forgotten MySpace.
Who?
Yeah, some, I don't know. I had to wiki that one.
It's gone it's gone the way of News of the World, apparently.
Page not found. However, under new stewardship...
Hang on, just before you move on, just be aware that MySpace has fallen off the radar in every field of endeavour in the world, with the exception of one, which is music.
Live music and bands.
Music and bands and not all of that sort of stuff. Not live, not just live music, recorded music as well, but yeah. It's a musician's place now, and that's all it is.
So what do they do? Play music there?
Every band, everyone who's ever recorded something in their back room, or you know, tried to do anything musical ever in their entire life, is on MySpace.
Oh,
because you can put up little clips of all your songs and everything.
Is there lots of garbage band in there?
Undoubtedly.
Most probably.
And they have these wonderful music players on the page that say that when you load, it can play four tunes at once.
Yeah, that's very why good. I don't like it.
Yes. That's why no one else except musicians use it. Yep.
Well, if you're coming along to visit us, Google Plus is where we're playing at the moment, playing being the word, evaluating technically.
Now, Gerard says, just to pick up on what Graham was saying as well, however, under new stewardship, he's talking about MySpace, and with some much-needed development, it may become a dominant force once again, from Gerard.
Maybe.
Now, who was it that was telling me, was it the games woman here, about the MySpace is being picked up again by someone.
No,
wasn't
me.
You?
Nope.
Wasn't you?
Not this time.
Yes. Our guest knows. We've got a special guest in tonight. He's going to be talking to us about digital cinema.
Who is this man sitting over here on our, to my left,
this
camera
is James
right.
Gardner. James has come in from Digital to talk about emerging trends in cinemas. What's happening when we're moving from traditional cinema to digital cinema?
Yeah.
And that's coming up in a little bit later on in
but
the show.
But he's just flagging, just yell quickly, James, because you've got no microphone there in front of you, but...
It was said that it was purchased by actual advertising group, and one of the main owners of this group was Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake, that was the name I was trying to think of. Thank you very much.
Oh, it could have been worse. Could have been Justin Bieber.
I'm a big fan.
Are you?
Yes.
Someone was telling me that. I thought it was you.
Nope.
I'm thinking of three other fellas. Justin Timberlake's interested in MySpace, so he might revitalise it. Mm. That's all the correspondence this week, Andrew. Feedback.
That was enough, wasn't it?
Send them in.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Indeed you are. Well, there's been a lot happening this week, hasn't there? In more ways than one, especially with the goings-on of the Google empire.
We have busy news weeks and we have quiet news weeks. This was a busy news week in tech, wasn't it?
Now, Google Plus, obviously, we're playing with at the moment. Dr. Ron, you've been playing with it for a week. Any initial comments that you want to add? Because you're very much against the photos being uploaded.
Why do you
titter
so?
Says he looking at Graham.
Yeah.
No, I'm...
Andrew asked me a perfectly legitimate question and you chuckled quietly to yourself.
I have no legitimate answer to that. No
I believe it was a chortle.
It was a bit of... It was verging on chortling. Mm. Andrew, I'm enjoying using it. It's very, very nice. Nice interface. It's fast. It's useful. I think it's going to take off.
Yeah, I have the same feeling. The scammers are out there at the moment too, for those of you who aren't aware, looking for Google invites. But I think they're fairly freely flowing again at the moment. They had a bit of an outage over the weekend where I think Google turned into a spam bot and just emailed everyone, I think, over the course of a couple of hours.
They ran out of disk space. That was the official reason.
They ran out of disk space and it decided that it was going to send those notifications somewhere, so it emailed it to everybody.
I thought Google owned all the disk space.
Well, maybe they had to pop down to the local electronic shop there in Mountain View and pick themselves up a few extra drives.
Mm.
Malicious hackers have targeted Google's social networking service for the first time in a scam that involves fake invites to the service. The fake invites spread through emails, and they look very similar to the actual invites that the service has. So if you get one of those and it's a bit sus, that is probably from someone who you don't know. So I think normal email protocols and, you know, that sort of mentality applies. If you get something that's not quite right, don't click on it. Scams such as this one, very common with major product launches. So every time you get a lot of these things out, you get these common sort of little hiccups that come along. And come and send us a request and we'll send you an invite or speak to someone who's part of the Tech Talk community or something like that, and they might be able to do the same one with you as well. But I must admit, I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
You've got your little checkbox turned on for the photo uploads?
I have. And that's been working quite well because being out and about on the camera, I just like the way that the device, the phone device, syncs pictures back up to the Google server and then brings it back down through Picasa, because we use Picasa at home for our sort of normal home photos. And that works really, really well. And, of course, it doesn't make them all public, as a lot of people think, oh, no, it's going to be appearing on... No, it doesn't do that.
Oh, good.
It just pops them up there so that you can see my photos, so that it's sort of all online for you. And when you load up your Picasa at home, guess what? My photos from your phone are all there. So if you lose your phone or you have a problem connecting up your phone to do your transfers, because you never do it like me, and you end up with, you know, 300 photos and no memory left in your phone, it's already done for you. Just blow them away at the time of your choosing. So there's lots of little features like that. So the Twitter sort of side of things, I'm getting the hang of that. There's, you know, with the following that you get in, because you know how you can follow someone on Twitter. Google Plus has a follow option in respect to its circle of friends, and that is people that you're interested in their posts, but you don't necessarily want to communicate with them, like the number one man on Google Plus at the moment. You know who he is?
Mr. Zuckerberg.
Correct. He's number one. Go Zook. He's probably looking at going, how am I going to compete with this? So that's there at the moment. What else has been pretty impressive? I think it's just the flexibility of it. It's very nice. The photo display method. Even you were commenting on this today.
Yeah, the Picasa-style photo sharing interface is very, very nice. It's done a great job. It's very easy to use and it's just visually appealing, I think.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it, isn't it? Visually appealing.
Hmm.
I just think functionality is really good, although mine's not functioning very well at the moment. I've been kicked out of the Hangout. Are you guys still in there?
No, I've never got in.
Oh, did you?
I was in for a minute too.
Yeah, I saw you there.
I've never seen myself in here yet.
No, because you were holding, your image was the back of your script that you were reading from, which was very funny.
Oh, was it?
Oh, was it?
Yeah, because you were holding it up in front of your webcam.
Was it a user fail? Oh, this script here, yes. this paper business.
Yes, you had that held up while you were reading the correspondence.
Well, let me try it again. We'll persevere. Let's click on join this Hangout again.
I think you have to make it public, otherwise the people in the chat can't join in.
No, you can't. You can specify it, and that's what I was about to talk about next. A Hangout is really quite a unique system. It's where you can actually come in and chat. So, for example, say you want to organise with a group of friends a night out, where you're going to go, what you're going to do, who you're going to see, all that sort of stuff, or just want to hang out, as the name suggests. What this does is you can select a circle, maybe a group of friends, whatever. We've selected the Tech Talk group of friends here at the moment, and we start a Hangout. So anyone in that group of friends can come along, and they click the little blue link, which is available only to those friends, and then they come into our room and we chat, and it's web and it's voice and it's text. And it's really quite a nice little feature of the device. And mine's currently not working. How's yours going, Dr.?
Nah, mine's not working.
Okay.
Mine's working again, and it's at the minute it's just me and Warlock and Stryker.
Oh, good.
I can see Warlock and I can see Stryker, but I'm looking at Graham's computer, but that's okay. We just take small steps initially.
Yes.
I wasn't invited. I wouldn't know.
You were invited, but you have a Mac device and it didn't know what to do.
No, yeah. I've actually brought it up on the page here.
You have got it, have you?
No.
It's good for radio.
We are sorry, but this product is not available on your device.
Oh, how sweet it is. How sweet it is.
That's not sweet.
Oh, is it?
No.
Okay.
I want to play.
iPad fail.
iPad fail.
Oh, well. It's in beta, Google Plus, so you know.
It's in what?
Beta.
Beta, yeah.
What's beta?
Beta.
Beta's American for beta.
It's an old, is that old what it video is? Format.
I say data as well.
Data?
Yeah. Data, not data.
Okay. You've been watching too much Star Trek.
Probably.
Yeah.
Actually, no. No, I have not.
All right. Well, to combat all of the goings on in the Google Plus world, Facebook launches video chat with Skype. Now, Dr. Ron, have you given this a run for its money? You were complaining and moaning and bemoaning the fact that Google had a 10 meg download or something on your Android device earlier on today.
Yeah, it was.
And you were saying, thank goodness I can put it on my SD card, otherwise it wouldn't get a mention.
Now, what was that I was downloading? That was Skype. Skype I was downloading. It was nearly 10 meg onto the Android device.
It's quite funny. In the office today, I was saying to Dr. Ron, I said, look, did you know you can install apps on your Android device without actually having your Android device on or anywhere near you? And he's going, oh, really? How do you do that?
I said, get away.
Anyway,
get out of here.
And the really funny part about it was that I went through and showed him, and you can see your old phones or any other phones that you have connected to Google through the App Store. So you can actually remotely install any app you like on any particular device you want. It's very cute, really.
It was very impressive. It saw my old phone there that I hadn't used for a couple of years. It had that still registered in my
Did you install anything on it?
Google account. No, I don't think I did.
When you turn it on next, it'll probably have an app sitting there waiting for you. Because it just, you know how you have to interact with the app?
Yes.
I wonder if that's a possibility for exploits down the track. Someone will work a way of installing something on it that you don't want.
And you made an interesting observation too, which was that your password to your Google account is almost as valuable as the password to your bank account these days, isn't it?
It sort of is, isn't
it? You are able to access so much information and do so many things with that account, with that username and that password, that it's really quite scary when you think about it.
Yes.
Now, you were talking about Mark Zuckerberg earlier being the number one user on the new Google Plus social network. We've identified early on, or a lot of people have identified early on, that we need a way to be able to verify very, very popular, high-profile, celebrity-type
on social
users
networks.
On social networks.
Yeah, it would be good.
Now, Twitter realized this, and Twitter have introduced the concept of verified accounts, where if you want to follow Justin Bieber, like Lena does every day.
No, I don't follow Justin Bieber. Lies and slander.
You want to be able to make sure that the person you're following is actually that person and not someone making up the name.
Now, you mean Andrew here might not be the real Andrew?
Well, it's possible.
It might be a fake.
It could quite well be a fake.
It's not me because I have no internet connection on my little laptop here at the moment. I'm working on it. So it's not me, whoever it is.
Imposter.
Have you got any internets at all?
I've just turned on a wireless hotspot in the studio here.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I'm glad it's not just me. And so Google obviously haven't looked at that yet, but it's something that they need to address because people are going to be wanting to follow their celebrities and friends and
and high-profile folk, but they haven't quite got there yet with that one.
Mm. No, and there's also going to be a business channel on Google Plus too, where businesses can get up there and sign up and become so-called legit business, you know, users. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes, and especially once you become you have channels, I guess, or your group of friends there, and you can follow, you know, manufacturers, distributors, movie houses, cinema you name it. It's very early, but we're speculating a lot. But it's all possible, I think. Lots to look forward to there.
Absolutely. Yep.
So anyway, Facebook and Skype, you haven't tried it yet?
I haven't tried it yet.
Because you're a bit of a Facebooker. Look, you've got numerous accounts up there.
Yeah, I am, contrary to the terms and conditions of the Facebook user policies.
Oh, really? You're only allowed one? I didn't know that.
I'm sure you are, yeah. The interesting thing is Mr. Zuckerberg said that this awesome announcement obviously was the partnership between Facebook and Skype, which we spoke about a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's being rolled out to all users at the moment, but he said it should be available to all users within the next few weeks. I've noticed just in the last couple of days that they've changed the applet that they use for the chat in Facebook. So if you regularly text chat to other Facebook users,
yeah,
the control or the applet that is used for that has...
little thing on the right-hand, right-hand corner,
it's
yeah.
changed. They've made changes. And I can't get access to voice or video chat just at the moment, but I suspect that will become available very, very soon.
Okay. Yes, well, obviously, this puts, Skype in an interesting position, because Skype now being, or about to be bought if they haven't done all the dealing yet by Microsoft. So does that mean we've now got a Microsoft and Facebook versus Google thing here? So we've got three camps. We've got Microsoft and Facebook, we've got Google, and we've got Apple. Is it the three main players that we're going to see in the next little bit?
Yeah, that's potentially.
Four? Well, it's the four, because Microsoft and Facebook are joined forces.
No, I know.
But it seems to be if you're not joined with Apple, or you're not joined with Google, then you're in the other camp, and the other camp is including Facebook and Microsoft and Skype and everything that goes with it.
All right. So, well, we've got Facebook, which has now got Skype, and they're integrating Skype video into their social networking service.
Yeah, it's Skype technology. It's not Skype. You don't have to be a Skype user. You have Skype loaded.
Yeah, that was the thing. You don't even have to have a Skype account, do you? It just becomes part of Facebook, which you just use.
They're using the technology under the covers.
Excellent. All right, so that's really our social networking sort of done and dusted. I've got internet again now, so we might all come back for those listening to us out there going, where have they all gone in
Thanks,
the studio?
Graham.
We'll be back.
Graham fixed the internet.
Did you?
Snuck out.
Did a reboot.
kicked it. Yeah,
those routers. Now, Optus, Supersonic, or Optus in particular, over Supersonic, were pinged $5.26 million, and Graham Samuel from the ACCC came out and said, if you reckon you can pull the wool over consumers' eyes and that's normal business practices, you've got another thing coming. Because this is the biggest fine the ACCC has ever managed to rack up against a telco, which the number two telco, which I guess, they do stretch the friendship. Out of all the telcos, I think Optus has been the one more times than not in front of Graham Samuel and the courts. Because we had all those words, we've discussed this at length with Graham, I think, didn't we, with the unlimited?
Yeah.
Infinite and all-you-can-eat type sort of words, which the phone companies seem to like to use. And Telstra, everywhere you need it, it wasn't. So they said, no, you can't say that.
That's right, yeah.
Anyway, the supersonic products, which Optus had, as soon as you used up your limit...
It wasn't supersonic anymore.
It wasn't supersonic anymore, and so your offload was...
or infinite, or unlimited.
No.
And you were shaped. You were brought down to something that was... You might as well get out there and push the trolley up the street. It was just... Use snail mail to get your emails out, because it was just unusable. So it wasn't supersonic by any way, shape, or form. So
no.
Mr. Samuel took them to the courts over that. And yes... Paul O'Sullivan came out and said, we didn't get any complaints. Can you believe that?
I think Mr. O'Sullivan's a bit delusional.
Oh, really? Why do you say that?
He didn't get any complaints. What, he's never had any complaints about
their... Well, maybe he doesn't get the inbox from the complaints department, if there is such a Singtel department.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, so that was a good
emails
one.
Emails to that mailbox that forwarded to DevNull.
Oh, yeah, one of those do not reply ones. Yeah. Mm. Okay. In other news this week, Final Cut Pro... is really gone the way of South, I think, at the moment. It's the only way to sort of say. For those of you catching up with this, Final Cut Pro is a
video... We're not going to bash Apple the whole night, Lena. It's okay.
Yeah, no, I'm used to it now. Don't worry about it. Like a Band-Aid.
Do that. Final Cut Pro is a video editing system, and it was originally a professional video editing system until the new version.
Video editing system.
Oh my goodness! There's nothing wrong with people at home just having to play with it.
Anyway,
there's more money in that than there is in the professionals.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And I think Apple see that, and that's the reason why they've done what they've done.
Yeah. So don't call it Pro.
Anyway, they should call it iMovie Pro, not Final Cut Pro. iMovie. Final Cut should have just finished, and they should have called it iMovie Pro, which is what its nickname's become in the industry out there at the moment. But there was a conference in San Francisco where a lot of post houses, that's the post-production houses, did a little shindig with the Apple people and said, what's going on? And a lot of their answers were very straight and to the point, and they're going to be relying on third-party products to give some form of functionality back to what it used to have. And some of the things which are really, really important, things like being able to load up a project in a previous version of Final Cut and being able to use it in your current version, they said no. Simply, and that's it. It's compatibility. It's not going to happen. And things like important plugins which would allow one system to talk to another system, like a video system to talk to an audio system, they said, well, if someone wants to write it, it'll come as a plugin, but that's pretty much it. So there's a lot of houses out there right around the world, including organisations like the BBC in the UK, which are very big Final Cut Pro users. Even here in Australia, there's a lot of people using it. It's certainly going to make them stop and think about what they're going to do, whether they jump ship and join another one of the manufacturers out there or suppliers of video editing equipment. Or will they stick with Final Cut Pro 7, I think, which was the last version to come out?
You got into trouble last week for your weasel words. Don't just say the other camp. They're going to jump ship from Final Cut Pro and go and buy...
Well, potentially they could buy Avid, but there are other options out there.
Are
there? It's not just
if
Avid.
If they've got $1 billion, they might. Yeah.
No. See, there's
you only need
with Final Cut Pro going a bit southern, there is an option to actually... Obviously, the manufacturers are becoming competitive and trying to get people to jump ship and go over to them, especially in the non-linear sort of scope of things. Yeah, that'll be it. See, the other downside, I guess, of the Final Cut system was the fact that you had to put other cards into your Mac, which I think Mac or Apple don't like supporting. The first thing you say, if you've got a problem, have you got any foreign cards in your machine? And they go, oh, yes, I've got a Blackmagic card or something like that in it. Take it out. And, of course, anyone who's using broadcast on one of those machines, they can't take it out because otherwise they can't get their pictures in and out.
What's a Blackmagic card?
Oh, it's a Blackmagic card is a little card you put in the machine which gives you, it's like having video out on the back of your DVD player, but it's a video out at a broadcast level without wanting to play Nerd Alert sound effects.
Coming out of your computer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which you can then put into a broadcast video recorder and record and then give that to a TV station or however you want to deal with it. So anyway, that's the Final Cut Pro update so far, which is all pretty interesting. So yeah, a lot of interesting news coming out. The other thing too, something positive for Mac, or something different for Mac.
Yay!
Apple are experimenting with a new way of charging their new iPhone for 2012. Mm. So it's...
Charging me money for it or charging my battery?
No, charging your battery. They're talking about...
Oh, there'll be more money involved. Make no mistake, young lady.
See, she's an Apple user. She knew that straight up, didn't she?
Yeah.
No, they're looking at induction charging. So you don't need a cable to put your iPhone... plug, the
that
white pluggy
handy.
Thing.
That would be very handy.
Well, it would be very handy because it'll save you having to go, which PowerPoint in the house did I leave that in
last time? I've got four chargers around my house, yes.
Oh.
I bought extra cheap ones.
You've got lots of Apple gadgets, iGadgets, and they're all common. That's the good thing I like about Apple. It's all the same plug and socket.
Roughly. The iPad one, you can't, it'll charge like in a year if you put it on the normal iPod one. Or the normal iPhone charger, it's got
it needs a bit of grunt, doesn't it?
Yeah, you've got to kick it up a notch for the iPad to get it charging. But roughly, you can plug any into any. But yeah,
so do you reckon that's a good idea? Just put your iPhone on a little like a plate thing,
yeah,
and it just inductively charges through the coil arrangement into your device.
As long as it happens at the same speed as putting a cable in, I'll probably do it.
The only problem that you've got is that if you're away from your device, you can't just plug a normal. Well, maybe you can. Maybe they're going to have both.
Mm. Maybe it'll be the case that the phone is in, some technology like that.
Maybe.
That's charging it all the time.
And then you need to build the same thing into the little holder in the car that you put it into when you're driving along.
Yep.
So you don't have to plug anything in. You just click it in the holder and it charges in that as well.
It's a great idea.
Great.
Mm.
Look, there's lots of room for movement in that sphere, isn't there?
Mm. I imagine the concept is they'll make the charging or the chargeable area bigger and bigger as the technology gets better and better. So you just have your whole bench in the kitchen. You just chuck your phone on the kitchen bench. When
and
you
other
walk
devices
in
too.
Yeah, that's right. And it just charges.
iPads.
It's in that charging zone, if you like.
Yeah, hopefully HTC's, there'll be a standard so that, yeah, the primary side of it will be the same for all devices, yeah.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The regular crew in this evening, you can come and join us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Hopefully our internet connections have been restored, and we'll be back there very shortly. After the break, we're going to find out a little bit about cinemas, what's going on with the wonderful things down the corner that we all go to on a Saturday afternoon and put our feet up and watch really big films in 3D, 2D, and have popcorn. You remember those, Doctor? When was the last time you went?
I went to the...
Actually, you're a frequenter.
I
when it comes to those sort of things, aren't you?
Film fairly recently, I think.
Yeah?
A couple of weeks ago.
And you've had good experiences and bad experiences with the major chains recently,
I've had
haven't
very
you?
Good experiences and very, very bad experiences.
Oh, we'll talk about that after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody.
Because you don't believe man walked on the moon, did you?
No, it was all done on the soundstage.
Shut up, Dr. Ron. That's not it.
Look, approve an R18 rating, or we're going to reform the way we do everything.
The road is now 2.4 metres from where the map says the road is.
That's flagfall for you.
Oh, Andrew.
So Mr. Zuckerberg is certainly...
Nonsense.
Entertaining.
I very much enjoyed it. I think it's very funny.
Informative.
It used to be cool.
Independent.
I gave up Warcraft for you, Lena. What else do you want me to do? You're going to bring me to my knees.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, look, it's on for young and old in the studio tonight. Everyone's playing on Google Plus. Hello, Feecan, I believe she's over there. Now that we've got some internet back, we've brought
a
down
girl.
The...
girl!
Yeah. Pardon?
A girl!
As a girl on the internet.
How do you know?
Wow.
A real one.
I didn't think there were any real girls on the internet.
Oh, dearie me.
We're still trying to work out... Oh, Dr. Ron's still trying to work out how to join this damn thing. But that's all right. Bear with me.
See, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. This is cutting-edge technology. We're flying by the seat of our pants. The
bleeding edge.
The girl over here can use the internet better than you can.
You're right. I've got absolutely... yes. No scruples with that whatsoever.
Oh, okay, that's good. Hey, send out a bit of a cheerio, too, to some stations that take us a long, long way away. Radio Ear Network, who we might have mentioned early on in the piece, but these guys are internet broadcasters based in the United States and also based in Europe. We're on in London, would you believe, in the wee small hours of Friday morning.
Howdy, Governor.
Yeah, that's it. Howdy, Gov. And, of course, our regular broadcasting partners, which pop up from time to time around the place. The people at Submarine Land in Holbrook in central Victoria.
Up at 2GHR.
2GHR, yeah. Yep. The Switch up in Brizzy, places like that.
Cairns FM.
Yeah, and we're going to join the satellite very shortly, so there'll be another 150 stations that'll take us, so watch out.
Maybe.
You'll hear us coming out of a supermarket shopping centre somewhere in the middle of nowhere next time you listen. So
hello, if you first heard us on the Community Radio Network and then decided to go back and download some other episodes that never made it on the Community Radio Network.
Yeah.
Now, hang on, now you're speaking forward in time to the future.
Yeah, this is the TARDIS. Yeah.
This is what it's come
That's
to.
That's a tricky thing.
It is.
Yeah.
But we're tricky people.
Because no one's heard us on...
No.
Community Radio Network. Yep.
No, but they haven't as of now. And then they've downloaded this. They've gone back and downloaded this. And
yeah.
Listened.
I see. It's very complicated.
What he said.
Now I'm confused.
Yeah.
Andrew.
Yeah.
Can you play something that's going to unconfuse us?
All right. Oh, let's go to Adam Turner. Hopefully this will be a little bit better. We're talking about Blu-rays and DVDs and what their future holds for them in respect to all these digital downloads and streaming downloads and things like that. Well, Adam has a view on that. And here it is.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
While some companies are betting that digital downloads are the way of the future, QuickFlix is betting on DVD's longevity. The rise of online movie services was meant to kill off the video store, but it seems they're not in a hurry to die. The fact is that technology rarely moves as fast as we think it will. This is because grand technological prophecies are made by digital hipsters who live on the cutting edge, a high-tech minority which believe they're a majority. It's worth remembering that it took DVD players a decade to outnumber VCRs. Right now, your average Australian is still negotiating the transition from DVD to Blu-ray. I don't mean your average digital urban hipster, I mean your average person on the street. Stand outside the local supermarket and ask everyone who walks past if they rent movies online or even have a 1 megabit broadband connection. Most of them will look at you like you're from another planet. Services such as Australia's QuickFlix were designed to ride out the transition from physical media to digital downloads. QuickFlix lets you book DVDs online and have them delivered in the mail, with a return envelope included. QuickFlix's US counterpart Netflix has already branched from DVD deliveries into streaming video services, but in Australia, QuickFlix has only dipped its toe in the water. QuickFlix plans to embrace streaming movies this year, but it faces serious competition from Apple and Telstra's Big Pond. The Big Pond Movies online movie service has long been rather pathetic alongside Apple's Australian offerings, but Telstra has given Big Pond Movies a major overhaul to coincide with the launch of the T-Box and expansion to LG and Samsung televisions. Now, QuickFlix has taken a major gamble by buying up Big Pond Movies' disc collection and its customers. Telstra obviously thinks that this is a smart move because it's betting on digital delivery as a way to lock in Big Pond customers before the NBN introduces greater competition. Telstra will even get paid for each customer that switches to QuickFlix rather than embracing Big Pond streaming internet options. It seems like Telstra is making an investment in the future, while QuickFlix is desperately trying to cling to the past. But that's a very short-sighted way of looking at it. The early adopters have already made the move to digital downloads from the likes of Apple, Big Pond, TiVo, the PlayStation 3, the Xbox 360, or old-school BitTorrent. Big Pond's DVD delivery customers have stuck with that service because they're not ready to embrace the world of digital downloads. You can be sure Big Pond will offer them amazing deals to make the leap, but many won't budge. Some won't be keen internet users, some will prefer the cheaper prices of DVD rentals. Some won't have fast enough internet access to download movies even if they want to. These people will certainly make the move to QuickFlix rather than let Big Pond push them into watching movies over the internet. By acquiring these customers, QuickFlix is making a long-term investment. One day, these people will be ready to embrace digital downloads, quite possibly when the NBN rollout reaches their doorstep. This is when QuickFlix investment will pay off, as it transitions those customers from DVD deliveries to digital downloads when the customer is ready. It's not dissimilar to the way VoIP providers buy up the maintenance contracts on old PABX phone systems, waiting for the day those customers are ready to upgrade to VoIP. Obviously, QuickFlix and Big Pond both have crunched the numbers and think they're on a winner. If the Big Pond Movies DVD service is drying up rapidly, then it might be smart to offload it to QuickFlix and get rid of those few pesky customers that won't make the leap to digital downloads. But QuickFlix is betting that this isn't the case. It's obviously convinced that DVD and Blu-ray have a few good years left in them yet. It's quite a gamble, but it's one that may well pay off.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Interesting comments there from Adam, especially in light of the correspondence we had at the start of the program about one of our listeners finding that they were being forced by Telstra to ditch the DVD mailing service thing. What's that called?
The video on demand via the postal service.
Yeah, the postal service DVD ordering system.
Very high tech for a telecommunications company. We'll post it to you.
I drove past a video store the other day and I found myself saying to myself, how on earth can that's assault. How on earth can a video store in this day and age still be in business? How can it work? But there were people in there. There were people browsing through videos and looking at the titles.
One of the big video chains discover that it doesn't work?
Yes.
I did.
Interesting. Thank you very much, Adam. We have a special guest in the studio tonight, James Gardner, and he's coming from Digital, and he's going to speak to us all about digital cinema.
As opposed to analog cinema?
As opposed to analog cinema. Well, I don't know.
What's the difference?
What do you call a cinema that isn't analog, I suppose, or isn't digital, I suppose? James, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Thanks for coming in tonight.
Thanks, Dr. Ron.
Now, you heard some comments that we made a few weeks ago, and I think you emailed me and you said, guys, you've almost got it right. You're coming close. You're sort of approaching at a particular angle, but you haven't quite hit the nail on the head there with what's going on.
So I thought I'd come in and clear it up and tell you why
sometimes you're looking at a great presentation in the cinema, and sometimes you're looking at something that's less than perfect.
Well, I'm glad you've come in. Just want to explain to everybody what it is you do and who you work for.
I have a company called Digidol Proprietary Limited, and it's a company that develops cinema technology or technology for cinemas, specifically going digital. We have another company called DCN, which was doing what's called the VPF for the independents in Australia.
All acronyms here.
I'll get onto VPF in the morning. There's a bit of a history lesson here. I'll get straight into it because there's a lot to say. There used to be the studios in Hollywood got together and they put a committee together and they came up with what's called the DCI standard, Digital Cinema Initiative Standard.
Yes.
DCIMovies.com, if you want to have a look at all the documents and everything to do with that. And that was basically how to move the industry into digital.
Now, is that a bit like how Lucasfilm have their THX standard and how, what are the other ones, SMPTE have their screen standards and all that sort of stuff?
It's similar. It's like SMPTE, but it was for the cinema industry. Right?
Okay.
And it was an initiative specifically for the cinema industry going into digital. Anyway, that happened and everyone started going forward, but going to digital meant you have to buy all this equipment for the exhibitor. It costs a lot of money. The exhibitor basically said, why would I spend all this money to upgrade my equipment so you can save money on giving me films? Because instead of giving me these $3,000 pieces of film, you're giving me a hard drive you can reuse.
Which so the exhibitor being the cinema?
The cinema.
Yep. So the cinema gets rid of, or they retire their old projector.
That's right.
And replace it with this hard drive and basically a big TV projector, really, is it?
Well, it is a cinema projector, yeah, specifically designed
massive,
for cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big cinema projector, DCI, made by TI.
And they can play up to 4K well. Resolutions and stuff, which,
yes,
is,
they can.
Which is twice the resolution that we get on television set, high definition.
And anyway, so then what's this thing called the virtual print fee came into existence, which stands for virtual print because they're not getting a print anymore, they're getting digital, and because they have to, they're buying the equipment to save the studio's money, they would reimburse them a fee to help them pay for this equipment.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. So this big virtual print thing happened around the world and you had to go through all these dancing and dancing sort of specifications or proof that you could do it, because back in those days it was very hard, because all this leading edge standards that we're talking about was all like theoretical and everyone's been developing their little head off for the
it
last
sounds a bit like
years.
3D, where there are many standards and no one's adopted any one particular one. In
respect well, 3D was a bastard child of the DCI thing that happened.
See, it's all interwoven, isn't it?
That's right. Because we went digital, 3D became possible, but it was sort of a tack on. And also 3D was a little bit there to help encourage people to go digital, because you couldn't do 3D unless you went digital. Right, so it was another sort of all work together to work, you know, for the studios.
But you can do 3D with film, though, can't you?
Oh, you can. Not that you would want to.
You wouldn't want to. It's a gutsy thing for a left eye and a right eye to be sync or film.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very expensive.
I'll take your word for it because I know nothing about the technology at all.
Anyway, so in Australia, we have it's called it's a company that was put together by the major chains, which is, you know, Hoyts, Village, Great Union, etc.
Yep.
Called DCIPA, and they have achieved their DCI contracts have been signed, and they're building up to that now, which basically means that there's a company which represents them in the service side, they're installing as many digital cinemas as they can as fast as they can, right? But what that actually means is that all the cinema chains out there at the moment, because this is happening, they've stopped spending any money maintaining their film projectors. So they're falling apart.
Right, right.
So,
yeah, well, why would you maintain something that's going to become redundant?
Absolutely. But that's also meant that if you get into a cinema which has digital, the presentation is beautiful. If you get into a cinema which has got the old film still going, which is probably falling apart, you're like, you know, you get unsatisfied presentations commonly now.
So film projection is really going to go into the enthusiast sort of category, like the Astor, where you get those passionate people who are, you know, film is everything to them, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So the commercial guys are going to go digital because it's cost effective.
Yes.
To a degree.
Well, it's very cost effective to a degree for them. Now I'd like to lead you on to some of the realistic and hard-edged realities of going digital.
All right.
Okay. If you look at, I make a website called cinetechgeek.com.
Cinetechgeek.com.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Now, on that website, I've made many videos. I'm a bit of a video cast myself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the last ones I made, which is something I recorded from what's called CinemaCon in the US, which is the biggest conference for cinema in the world. It's all around the world, but that's the main one because it's right next to Hollywood and Las Vegas. All right. And one of the guys there, I've forgotten his name, he's the third one down in the, he's from screendigest.com or .org. He was doing a talk about how far we've gone to digital. And in 2013, 75% of all cinemas in the world, according to the statistic of the, you know, the trend, will be digital.
That's not far away.
It's no.
12 to 24 months away, really,
isn't
it?
That's right. That's right. And then there's another guy called Jonathan Fife of NATO, which is the National Association of Independent Cinemas in the US, then dropped a bomb saying in 2013 he believes that Hollywood will stop making film completely. Right?
That's a gutsy call. Wow.
I know. If you look at the graphs, it's theoretically true. I think it'll go a little longer, but the thing is, it's not a very far away. And well, if you're not digital, you better be building up to your budget to build up to your purchase very soon now. And I can also believe that this is the case because our work, because we do a lot of selling of our software, because we sell our digital software to India. And the word from India is they believe that they will stop using film within a year, year and a half as well. So the little, you know, mice that's speaking into my ear from my industry people that I talk to, and film's going to end pretty quick. And when it ends, it's going to be, whew, where is it?
See, I can see that there would be a place for film for the purists and the people that like film because it's film. But for everybody else, I'm probably naive in my thinking, but I can't understand why a digital distribution wouldn't be cheaper for everybody, because you've got so much less overhead in terms of shipping physical film around the world.
Yes, and that's why a lot of people, you know, there's some people think it'll happen very quickly when it happens, because there is a massive saving.
But why? But presumably there's a big upfront cost in the initial conversion to,
that's
to
true,
digital.
Yes, yeah. Yes. You're talking about anywhere between $60,000 to $100,000 per screen.
Which is a lot of money if you're a small company and you run a little independent movie theatre down the road.
That's right. So if you're a fourplex.
And there's no subsidies from any of the film houses or anything like that?
That's what the VPF was about.
Yeah.
But otherwise, no, there's no subsidies.
So the poor little operators, the independents out there that don't have the big bucks like the big chains do, are going to be struggling to find that amount of cash to do an upgrade for their cinema. And what are they going to show if there's no film?
Well, there was a VPF that was going to be done for the independents, but that's been put on hold, and I'm not allowed to talk about it because I'm connected with the company which has been in the federal court case, which you mentioned the other week.
We had it in the news. That's right. Yeah.
And so we'll just skip that a bit. But yes, we hope as a representing DCN to achieve the VPF or get a path to the VPF as soon as possible, because it may hurt the independents if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'd say there'd be a lot of independents out there, especially in rural centres, not so much in the cities, but you know, the small country guys.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons. Like I do my CineTech Geek. The reason I just did my podcast, etc., because many years ago I looked back, because I'm an IT type person working in the industry, which is going from something very different. Like we're talking about people who are used to cogs and wheels and stuff, and when it breaks, that wheel's broken. We call someone, we get it fixed. These days, it's like a car, right? You get a really modern day car, and you drive it, and something goes wrong, and you open the bonnet and you look in,
and you close the bonnet.
Well, no, there's usually there's a lot about three yellow places you can touch.
That's right. They color code what is user serviceable, don't they,
these days?
That's
right. And that's what it's becoming to them too. So they're completely out of their depth, because before they could either fix it themselves, and a lot of the independents did, because that's their passion to make film work, and the mechanics of how film work, that's what their passion was. But now it's driving a car they can't touch, because they just don't have the ability to do it. And that's like, you want to talk about how going digital has affected the industry. It has turned the industry on its head in that sense. The people who used to service it are trying to learn it as fast as they can, but unfortunately, most of them don't have a chance. It is just totally different. We're talking about very old people in their 40s and 50s and 60s who were usually fixed projectors. So the industry is going through a major, massive change. And
this is at all levels?
Well, we're talking about taking care of the equipment and how the process works of putting pictures on screen, yes.
Yeah.
But you know, otherwise it's working the same way it always has.
So what's that going to mean in terms of the quality of the experience for people going to the cinema? We've seen the decline in the quality of the loss of the projectionist art, if you like. The film-based presentation quality is getting worse and worse, and problems don't get noticed and problems don't get fixed. But if you're saying that no one at the moment understands the digital technology either, does that mean that we're going to have problems with that too that also are not going to get fixed and that we're going to suffer from poor quality there as well?
Now, strangely enough, I would say the quality is going to improve a lot, mainly because there's no humans involved. All right, it's completely computerized from now on. If one of these systems, they're so monitored, if there's a problem with them, the systems will report problems and park themselves, and that screen will go off screen and they'll lose those sessions. But the systems are so clever, they'll, you know, if you've got trained technicians, you can log into all the systems remotely, analyze them, see what's going wrong, and you dispatch an engineer to go and fix it. So what I'm saying is that things will go wrong, but as a viewer, you won't see it because those issues will happen outside of you. You won't be able to see that screen before it goes wrong. Do you understand? So otherwise, they'll work perfectly because they're completely mechanical now with the lens changes and everything. They're all perfect, all done by a computer. They happen the same every time. You're not going to get unfocused or anything like that anymore because it's you know, and computers don't make mistakes.
What about problems? You're saying like it automatically changes lenses and so on, things like that. What about sort of what might be a minor technical thing, like a spot of dust on a lens that causes a dark spot on the screen?
Oh,
problems like that
that will theoretically happen, and that won't stop the session. It'll annoy you, but if that happens and someone reports it, there will be someone who will go and fix it on the spot, because that's the sort of level of support that can do. Go wipe a lens, and the general manager will have the ability to do that. But to a degree, that's not very common, because most of the new cinema environments are much cleaner, and because there's no one actually crawling around up there anymore, they generally are cleaner because they're not doing anything up there anymore, and they're usually clean environments anyway.
I was watching the movie show the other night with David and Margaret. Sorry, thank you for that. there's some new films coming out which are basically shot the old way, the old 4:3 boxy ratio.
Mm.
And they were saying on the movie show that chances are a lot of the cinemas won't be able to play that because it's the old ratio. Is that because they don't have lenses? Is that right, what they would say?
No, I wouldn't say that's right. If you want to get real technico and boffin off a bit, generally a digital cinema projector can show what is it?
All the ratios? Or?
It's got a the full frame is 2048 by 1080,
mm-hmm.
right? And whatever master format you like, if you're a HD or something, right, and you're 1920 by 1080, you would squeeze that into there and do a really good resize to make it look properly.
Yep.
If you were getting a 4:3, you'd just sit it in the middle and you'd resize it to sit into that frame, and there you go. And that's how it's generally done. The use of anamorphic lenses in digital cinema has been sort of abandoned. They looked at it for a little bit. Anamorphic lenses mean that the picture, as it's stored on the film or in the digital format, is not square pixels, so it's squashed, and it uses an anamorphic lens to stretch it out. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's where you, on traditional film like CinemaScope, etc., if you looked at CinemaScope film and you put it up to the light, the picture would be all squashed.
I didn't know that.
Right,
that's interesting.
And then you'd need the anamorphic lens to slide in to stretch it out to so it's all square.
So the aspect ratio is correct when you look at it.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
By not doing that, what you're doing is you're wasting resolution and you're wasting bandwidth by having black bars actually in the display device.
That's true. That is very correct. But it's, in my opinion, this is traditionally why they didn't do it, is anamorphic lenses are far from perfect, and the use of them inevitably actually made them more blurry than better.
Oh.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right? So you can get anamorphic lenses that good, but and lenses get tired, and they wear out as well. So they've just decided to go away from that. No one, they're just not used in digital cinema now. But now we've got 4K. If you want to go to that sort of thing, there's 4K. And let me just, if you want to talk about 4K, 4K is very uncommon in Australia. I don't think there's only been any 4K sold. And when
for the most part, digital cinema in Australia, you're watching a picture that's 2048 pixels wide, and what did you say, 1080 high? Which is not that much different from your high-definition television at home.
Well, it's to get geeky again, it's either 1998 by 1080, which is what's called flat, and that aspect ratio, or if it's scope, it's 2048 by 858 pixels high, and that's the resolution you get to see on the screen, right? On those two, if you're looking, a scope is the wider picture.
So are we going to start seeing these larger formats come out in Australia, or is it
the larger projectors?
Yeah, or the 4K projectors, yeah.
I say that would be yes, but statistically, if you look at the use of 4K and going into where they've done side-by-side tests, etc., if you're in any typical cinema in Australia and you had a 2K and a 4K and you're looking at the premium spot, you won't know you won't see the difference because the pixel per... you know, there's the resolution that you can pick up from those distances aren't really, you can only really pick up 2K. So having a 4K image doesn't mm-hmm. give you any more sharpness.
So the 4K image would be sharper than the eye can detect. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Yeah. But if you have a really big screen, or if you put people really close to the screen, it makes a big difference.
Mm. So how big, bigger than most cinemas in Australia, you're talking to get to that point?
Well, yes, most cinemas would only have one to two screens that big because usually that's the only, you have the main thing coming out on your bigger screen. Like a typical cinema would have one to two big, well, if you're an eight screen, you might have a really big screen, a medium screen, and lots of small screens.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're pumping the big releases in the bigger screens, and after the first week, the numbers fall off, and then you push them into the little screens. Right, and that's how it generally goes. So the need for 4K projection, like even Barco said in one of their promotional materials, they only see 20% of cinemas needing 4K, if at all.
But I'm just blown away by this idea that the 2K format that you're going to see in almost every cinema is actually roughly equivalent, or in some cases, I think you said even less than the 1080p that we're watching on our LCDs at home.
Yeah, I know.
That's just extraordinary.
So when you go and see one of the 3D films,
yeah,
and it looks a lot better, when I say it looks a lot better, as you're saying, it's perceived better, like, yeah, wow, that's pretty crisp and sharp and clear and all that sort of stuff. It's not that much different to what an HD stream is on your telly at home.
That's right.
Wow. If you had a really good TV at home, it could look just that good.
Well,
off Blu-ray.
Well, yeah, well, in the cinema, they do triple flash, which basically means that for every eye, you see it flashed at you three times a second.
Yep.
Right? So, which equals up
to... And your Sony Bravias do 300 hertz, the same sort of concept?
They probably do. I'm not sure if they go up to triple flash because the LCDs, etc., aren't very good at changing rates that much. They have a transition problem when they change. You don't have that with DLP chips.
What are they? What are DLP chips?
Well, a DLP projector.
Yeah.
Okay, DLP is a type of chip made by TI, which has got those moving mirrors. You know those chips for the projector with the moving mirrors?
Vaguely, yeah.
Okay, well, that's what's used in most of the projectors in Australia. Sony also makes something that's very similar, but it's not really sold in Australia. And basically, you've got a chip. They've got these, what they call cinema grade ones, which are super high quality, because you can buy DLP projectors over the shelf counter for...
Yeah, your home cinema projectors can yes, use that site. Yeah, digital light processing, it's called, yeah.
That's right. Well, they change, I think I saw once 10,000 times a second.
Right? Okay.
So that actually, if you're a technical person, that can actually get you down. If you work the maths, you can work out the actual color density or the how much color that can give you, mm-hmm. depending on, because you can only change so much of a second, so it can tell you how many bits per second it can change, so which gives you the color capabilities. Mm-hmm. If you like, I know John would probably be interested in that, but that's why when you start going to triple flash, you're cutting it up so much, you actually lose a little bit of perceptual color, and especially with the if you've got active glasses, you can actually start seeing it, where you'll see banding some of the blue skies.
Okay, it's a bit like a strobing in the old days, where you used to look at point a camera on the telly and it would ripple.
That's right.
Yeah, well, you're starting to see all that coming through. So,
but what you see now with fast moving action with those projectors is you see a kind of a rainbow in what should be just a black or a grey shadow.
You're talking about spinning wheel projectors there.
Oh, okay.
And that's because they actually have a wheel that spins past the single light. So to get the red, green and blue, they actually have six-segment wheels which have other colours as well, but I can't really go into that right now. But that spins red, green and blue. As the red, green and blue passes the light source. The DLP then turns on and sends the red picture. Then the blue part comes and turns on and sends the blue picture. And that's why if you turn your head quickly, your eyes can pick up the different colours hitting the screen and you get the rainbow effect on the edges.
Oh, goodness. I'm... I thought this was a simple thing, projection, but no, it's not. It's very,
very
complex.
Very complex.
But all DLP projectors are, of course, three-chip projectors, so they do the light for every colour simultaneously.
Oh, okay, so they avoid that rainbow effect.
That's
right,
that's why they're very
professional
expensive.
Ones. Okay.
And the main reason all this kit is so expensive is because the DCI specification specifies what's called FIPS 802, I forget the exact number, which is a military spec for what is used, for example, to protect... weaponry launch codes, and that sort of projection was what's used for protecting films,
so that you can't take a copy of it.
Yes, that's
off
right.
The hard disk. At the
so
cinema.
It shows you how serious they are about this. So we're talking about nuclear bomb sort of protection codes to show a film, and so that development has been exceptionally high, and it's why when it's taken such.
Oh,
a
the
long
film
time.
Houses would love that.
Well, they do.
Nothing for sneaking out apart from their little screen of DVDs and all that sort of stuff when they do their movies. James, so you've sort of waylaid my fears in one respect. You're saying that the cinema experience theoretically is going to get better in the next little bit. For the operators of the cinemas, it's going to be interesting times in the next sort of 2 years.
Very interesting years.
Where are we going to be after that? What's going to – the whole wash-up of all this? Any ideas where – from a consumer's point of view, we're not going to notice anything, are we? The cinemas are still going to be there.
Yep.
But will we notice small people falling out of the game and more large, the big breed of cinema chains coming into being because
maybe,
what are we going to see?
That's a little bit – that's –
it's crystal ball, I know. I like asking crystal ball questions.
That's potentially true. One could say big chains could see that this is an opportunity to pick up the small chains because if they don't pick up the VPF, they have the VPF, when they move in, they can bring the VPF with them, which will then reduce the costing of them converting the cinema, which goes to the price of buying
the
cinema.
It's a bit like Bunnings coming in and buying out all the hardware shops, isn't it?
And it might happen, but I think the big cinemas really have their hands filled just doing this conversion.
Yeah.
And they're trying to manage the conversion and try and figure out the best ways to save costs. So unfortunately, this conversion, what it means is the art of projection is dead.
Ah.
Right?
So you're telling me my 16mm license that I got 20 years ago back at uni, it's not worth the paper it's printed on anymore.
No, unfortunately.
Oh, damn. There go the carbon arcs.
They'll be doing documentaries about you soon.
Look, when the ghost... when the ghosts get up, it's non-existent.
We've started already. We're doing documentaries about him already, James. He doesn't know this, but yes.
But that's unfortunate. And I expect some people will keep it going for the historical reasons of doing it, etc. But in terms of business-wise, it just doesn't make sense, the cost savings and where everything's going. So that really dictates what's going to happen to that era.
Film will become something for enthusiasts and aficionados and for mainstream.
Yes.
For the cattle, like me.
I look at it like what you look at when you see 16mm films or Super 8 film now, people still do it, but why?
Yeah.
And the same reasons will exist for 35.
Artistic reasons, that's surely. Right.
Yes. James, we should all keep an eye on your blog for updates about film and cinema developments in Australia. CineTechGeek.com, is that the one?
That's the one, yeah.
CineTechGeek.com. Thank you very much
for
joining us tonight.
It's been great.
And thank you very much.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Google has opted out of Germany now.
But that's not the whole problem.
Lino, help us. You need to come back. All is forgiven.
Yeah, what do you want? I can't deal with this now.
Absolutely.
That's very wrong.
It was very rude.
And obviously pretty good on the batteries too.
Not happy, Jan.
Oh, well. You have nothing here which does not have an Apple on it.
That's the way I like it.
Couldn't even tell whether you were male or female.
No. Frankly, no.
Have you worked out the five-finger fondle yet?
I hate toolbars on browsers.
Yes.
That really drives me insane.
Yes.
That lacks couth as well.
That lacks complete couth.
Graham took umbrage during the week with a ranking system that I developed on the forum.
Should have known that was coming.
good cabler is worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Apple, shall we?
Yay.
Oh, Apple scandal.
Yeah. That's when I thought I got out. They pull me back in.
Entertaining. They post some lolcats.
No, they haven't posted any lolcats yet that I've seen.
Informative.
At some point, litigation must come to an end.
Exactly.
Independent.
I'm not queuing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So now we know everything there is to know about digital cinema. Not, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next little bit, isn't it? Dr. Ryan, did you learn something?
I learned lots of things.
Yeah, good. There'll be questions after the show in the car park.
Good. I learned heaps of stuff.
All right. All sorts of other interesting news during the course of the week, which we're going to try and cram into this action-packed two-hour show tonight. Virgin Australia has capabilities to use mobile phones in flight. They've been spotted with their little things on the roof of planes that talk to satellites.
Oh, okay.
So maybe we're just waiting for Senator Conroy to give the all-okay for aircraft internet in this country, because everyone else is doing it everywhere else in the world, but we just don't seem to have it on our domestic flights or anything like that at the moment, which is a bit of a bummer, really.
Little Bird tells us that Qantas are ready to go.
Yes.
But they can't throw the switch because of the legislation here.
Yeah.
They'd love to be able to throw the switch and give access internet access to everybody straight away.
Now, Qantas came out during the course of the week and said mobile phones can't fly because of the batteries. The risks from lithium-ion batteries exploding. Now,
what a load of nonsense.
Sony would know all about this, wouldn't they, with their laptop batteries that went bang?
Is that the reason they're giving for you not being able to use a mobile phone in an aircraft?
Ah, well, Australia...
Because you can use a mobile phone in an aircraft. Just turn flight mode on. It's using the same battery, and it's using the same device at the same altitude.
And it's not like it gets any safer because you're not using it either.
No, because you're playing Angry Birds.
In your pocket, yeah.
Well, here's what the article says. Australians transporting mobile phones in their airport baggage or via Australia Post may unwittingly be in breach of local and global regulations regarding lithium-ion battery transport.
So this is different. This isn't carried in your pocket on the flight. This is packing them into your bags.
The energy dense batteries are banned from being transported in checked luggage and air freight due to the risk of spontaneous combustion under certain circumstances. Now, according to the US Federal Aviation Administration, combustion may occur when a battery short circuits, is overcharged, is heated to extreme temperature, is mishandled, or is used for Lena's Twitter account.
Yeah. I spontaneously combust when heated to extreme temperatures. I
just move a little
to the
right there, Dr. Ron, before she's
spontaneously combusts all over
exactly.
us.
Exactly. Yeah. So, anyway, smaller batteries for portable electronic devices are allowed under specific conditions in carry-on baggage, as long as their capacity is less than 100 WH. What's that? Watt hours? Capital W, lowercase h. And they contain less than 2 grams of lithium. I bet you don't know how many grams of lithium are in your phone battery. I couldn't tell you.
No, I don't. Warlock in the chat room says he turned airplane mode on his mobile phone.
I'm just watching Warlock in Google Plus. He's gone into airplane mode on the...
Is he?
He's flying in the airplane.
He put airplane mode on and then threw the phone in the air and it fell on the ground and broke. He says, the worst transformer ever.
Didn't transform into a plane.
Well...
It's nice having our resident Foley expert on the panel back again, isn't it?
Yeah, it stops us dead in our tracks and all that sort of stuff. Oh, really? Who?
Dr. Foley.
Dr. Foley? Yes, it's Dr. Foley. Well, I guess it's that time of the night.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Now, you've corrupted young Dr. Ron sitting next to you. He's gone off and he's bought Portal 2. He's
gone
the next leg.
I've made him better, not worse.
That's because his wife's going away and he's going to miss her and he needs something to do to keep pass the time at night.
You have your weighted companion cube.
What did that games woman make you do, my wife said? Words to that effect. That games woman.
Games woman.
Yes. Tell us about Steam and the sale.
Yeah, I told you all about
that
the Grandes
Vendida.
Yeah, Grandes
Vendida. Now, Steam is a place where you guys go to buy things.
It's a digital distribution platform.
You
for
check
games.
Your credit card at the door. It's a bit like me going into a Sony retail center or something like that. Yes,
a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. And it's a digital distribution for games, and they're usually a lot cheaper because they are just a download instead of buying the box.
None of this optical thing and a bit of paper with it. Yep.
Yeah. So, Portal 2, which I talked about when it first released, After I made Ron play Portal 1.
Yeah, and he found that the cake was a lie. And,
yes, that's right. Portal 2, when it was released, was about $80, was it? I think it was something like that. $80, yep. Something around that vicinity. And it's 50% off at the moment for $24.
Now, you were saying that this, you can play this on different platforms, can't you?
That doesn't
PS3.
Add up.
What do you mean it doesn't add up?
You said it was 80 and then it was 50% off and now it's 24. That doesn't add up.
No, sorry, it was 49. It was 80 when it first came out, then it's been on Steam as 49 and now it's...
Oh, I see. Sorry. You left a step out there.
I did. I forgot you weren't in that part of my brain.
You've got to keep up when it's leaner.
You do.
Think fast.
You know, there's a level of assumption required on this show, Graham, and you failed.
I did.
So Portal 2 was very, very cheap. Only $25. So I
$25 yeah. US dollars.
Oh, even cheaper.
Yeah. So it's like $22 yeah. for us. So I let Ron know that Portal 2 was on special. I hinted towards him. I think I told you on like 3 social networks.
Ron, click this link. Have Visa card in yep. hand. Do it now.
And
you said.
He did it. And now you're playing Portal 2.
Now that $22 Australian is compared with Portal 2, which I saw in EB Games about 3 weeks ago for $105 or something for the boxed package for the PlayStation 3.
That's a massive difference.
I mean, it's less than a quarter of the price. So,
And how are you finding it?
Well, I'm not allowed to say because my Mrs. Dr. Ron might be listening.
Oh, right. You haven't yes. loaded it up yet?
I haven't loaded it up yet.
Oh, of course not.
No. I played... I thought I'll watch the intro and then I'll play it properly a bit later. And then I watched the intro and played it sort of sucks you into playing the first level.
So, mate, when does she leave? She's got a day and a half to pull this down onto the podcast while she's on the plane listening
to
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, because my wife's going on holiday soon. But in all honesty, I've played up to about level 3
yep.
And thought, okay, stop there, put it away. I'll wait until I've got
time. And she thought you were busy at work is the reason why you didn't want to go. You just want to play Portal, don't you?
Play Portal too.
Beer, pizza and Portal.
That's it.
And bacon.
Bliss. Absolute bliss. But, the Steam sales are actually something that they do twice a year. They have a really massive sale.
Still on now? Or are you preaching to the people that have gone, oh, damn?
It's on right now, but only for a little bit longer. So if you're listening right now, get onto it right now. They do it twice a year, though. This is they call it the summer sale because they're based in the US.
Should I buy it? Would I regret it?
No, you won't regret it. Oh. I promise.
Dr. Ron, do you regret it?
I don't regret it. I'm a better person for it.
See?
Yeah, you need to. Okay. You need to. Yep. Yeah, you should. You should get number one first and then number two.
Is number one on sale? Is it on special?
Not necessarily, but it's cheap anyway.
It's about $10 anyway.
Oh, that's cheap at half the price.
Yeah.
On Steam, yeah.
Well, 80% if you want to.
So
ask
I should
Graham.
Go and buy both now that they're...
You should. Yeah.
I'm the same boat as you, Graham. I don't have any of them.
No.
I'm saving
it up to play it at another time when I'm going to have spare time. So.
Well, you can buy it now and download it later.
Okay.
So, you can sort of put it in your library and then activate it whenever you're ready. But highly recommend you do that now. They do these sales here twice a year. This is called the summer sale because it's based in the US, so it's summer for them. And then they have one around Christmas as well that's usually really big. To give you an idea of how big this sale is, there's currently on Steam 1,000 games for under $10. Yeah. That's
so,
huge.
Dr. Ron, have you checked your credit card, ripped it up? Actually, no, your wife did that for you, didn't she?
There's 790 games for under $5.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Misspent youth in the United States in summertime. Goodness me.
How could you get it wrong? You're almost saving money by buying the games.
Exactly. Now, You're almost making money.
That's ridiculous.
That's how much
I can feel a marketing department coming on here.
You can get Battlefield Bad Company 2.
I think they have successfully brainwashed Dr. Ron.
So, Lena, tell us about Steam. It's an online... What's the address?
Store.steampowered.com.
Okay, and they sell what? Every, computer games for any platform? All platforms or just PC or
PC
Mac?
PC and Mac.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, you just download and install
Steam
and...
Steam has started to come over to the PlayStation 3, but it's not fully integrated yet.
Okay. Steam is the best place to go and buy all these sort of things.
I think so. I think it's really good value for your PC and your Mac gaming.
No box, sure. no CD, a lot cheaper.
Yeah, a lot cheaper.
Oh, good.
If you don't mind it not having the hard copy, then it's not so bad.
Okay.
Mm. No, I really, really enjoy it. But you can get some massive bargains at the moment. You've got Borderlands, which was really big when it came out for $20. Battlefield Bad Company 2 is like $5 now, which is ridiculous. Terraria is a really popular game at the moment. That's $5. Just Cause 2, $5. All these games you'd find in the actual shops for ridiculous amounts of money. So highly, highly recommend. Get Magicka.
Do they have...
Here's an interesting stat for you. Sorry, Graham, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, do they have decent download servers? So if you download a Portal 2 is presumably a fairly big game.
It is.
It's going to be a...
I think it's about 12 gig.
Yeah, it was about 11 gig, nearly 12 gig. And I was on my piddly ADSL 2 Plus at home, which is like broadband speeds. I was getting about 4 megabits per second down.
Yeah, but if we had a real internet connection, would we still get a decent speed down, or would we be struggling along at Dr. Run speeds?
I reckon 4 meg down's pretty good, just quietly.
if we had real internet in this country, the PlayStation updates would only take a few seconds, not days that we do at the moment.
You can do a lot of tweaking with what servers you're downloading them from as well. So you can a lot of them are in their free zone for your particular provider.
Ah, right.
Okay. Now, you're an iPhone user, aren't you?
Yes.
Here's some interesting stats that came out by Nielsen. They're the people who do surveys. Mm-hmm. The average iPhone gamer spends nearly twice as much time playing every month as the industry average for smartphone gamers.
Doesn't surprise
me. So the iPhone is the platform for gamers.
Yep.
I don't know how you could do it on such a small screen. The iPad's good, but the iPhone? Do you play many games on the iPhone?
I play a lot of games on my iPhone. Probably more than anything else.
Oh, so the survey's correct in all way, shape and form.
Well, yeah, because it's accurate to me, so therefore it must be accurate to absolutely everyone.
I play more games on my Android phone than I do on my PC at home, which is to say I play one on my Android.
Well, the survey also found that iPhone gamers play for average 14.7 hours a month, ahead of Android gamers, which play just 9.3 hours a month.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and both are above the industry average of 7.8 hours since the devices under-index considerably. Windows phone gamers spend 4.7 hours a month playing, according to Nelson, probably because their phones can't make calls. Poor Brian had one of those. He got rid of that real quick. But there is an Xbox plug-in. That was his favourite app, would you believe, on the Phone 7 device. And
for a telephone, it makes a good handheld games console.
Correct. the BlackBerry owners spend 4.5 hours a month. There you go. There's some interesting stats. I've got more here, but we're running out of time. Apparently.
Snake.
Oh, that's the one where you chase around and your tail gets longer and you've got to not go up your bottom.
I used to like that one.
Yeah.
On the Nokia, on my old Nokia. That was a great game. But yeah, Steam is definitely a way that the economically minded gamers can still have fun.
Some other interesting news too while we're on the subject of downloads. Apple's App Store has served 15 billion application downloads according to Cupertino last Thursday.
Wow.
15 billion.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of downloads, isn't it?
Mm.
No wonder they're heading up there for the biggest company in the world.
That's
really
not,
isn't it?
All 15 billion weren't all downloaded last Thursday.
No. They have from inception.
Until last Thursday,
15 billion. According to the official numbers, the store has gone from zero to 425,000 apps in just 3 years. About 100,000 of those are iPad native. There you go. You've probably got a lot of them over there, haven't you? What's your favourite game on the iPad? Have you got one? Yeah.
Are you putting me on the spot a little bit?
I've been using this thing that Dr. Ron likes called Train Conductor. That's a lot of fun. That's a lot of fun. The girls love it. It's really simple, and you can take it to bed and play on it for half an hour or so.
It's by the Voxel Agents. Very talented game developer.
And they've got a new version of it out in America. But anyway.
Tiny Wings is probably my favourite at the moment.
Really? Mm. What does that do? What's it involve? So is she loading it on her device?
Yeah, I'll have to show you.
It's radio. It doesn't work by...
I'm showing you, not everyone. Oh, it's too noisy. I'll have to show you later. But it's similar to... not much really. But it's you play a little bird who slides down hills and it's sort of inertia-based.
Oh,
physics.
I've seen that. I think my girls downloaded that too the other day.
It's quite addictive.
Is it?
Yeah, it's good.
Is it a penguin thing?
Sort of, yeah. It's a really weird
looking
bird.
I was about to say, it sounds a lot like that penguin, yeah.
Yeah, and he sort of slides down the hill and you've got to try and get enough air underneath you to make your way up the next one. And yeah, it's simple, but that's what I love about the iPad games. A lot of
science.
Them are so simple. Yes, physics.
I think the iPad is a wonderful device for playing games on. It's just the right size.
Mm.
It's too small for watching movies and things like that, although others will... have a go at me about that. It's a good personal thing. But I think the iPad is just great for the games and stuff like that. Makes it really easy.
iPhone's good too.
And the thing I like about it too is the kids pick it up easy. It's not like a computer where they end up, you know, changing all your software and logging onto your email and sending tweets for you.
Yeah.
You've seen those tweets that come out all gobbledygook. It's not spam, it's a kid.
Yeah.
But well, Andrew's drunk again. Yes.
Yeah.
More bizarre garbled texts from Andrew. Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, it could be worse. It could be pocket dialing. Get a few of those these days.
Yes, you get a few pocket dial, handbag dialings too.
I think the iPhone's pretty good for that too. My wife rings me at least once a day with a handbag dial because she's got the iPhone.
Really?
Yeah.
How does she unslide it by accident?
She plays with it and puts it down and then normally she rings me back just after she's called me.
Yep.
And that's how it's sort of in that unlock state.
Yeah.
Mind you, my Android's good. It's got a mind of its own. It'll ring people just on a whim. Who shall I ring today? Oh, don't ring him. Then you get these people, you rang, you left a missed call. Yeah, I've done that on numerous occasions.
As long as you don't owe them money, it's all right.
No, that's right. So, Dr. Ron, Portal it is for you for the next few weeks.
Portal 2 it is, yeah.
Portal and Peter.
I think we should try and get Graham to install it on his ThinkPad so here before the end of the program.
Yep.
I think what we should do is get Graham to actually come up on Twitter and let people follow him. We should start
We've had a lot of people asking.
A lot of people saying, why can't we follow Graham on Twitter?
I want to follow Graham on Twitter. His account's locked and...
Yes, it is.
Because
it was never intended to be public and...
He's got a cryptic Twitter name. We need him to be...
You should change...
What are you hiding, Graham? What are you hiding?
I just...
it's that one tweet you get every calendar month, which is a perler.
And then there's five tweets after it of all of us going, he's tweeting!
Yeah. He's tweeting.
Everyone rings everyone.
All right. I'll make a public Twitter account.
Woo-hoo! Oh, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
One day.
Things that...
Of course, we could always make one for you.
Well, that's how I got
a parody account.
That's how I got on Facebook. Did you know he'll do that?
I'm Graham Kelly.
Yeah, he would too.
We should all start not the real Graham Callaghan.
Or make a fake Graham Callaghan account.
Make a fake Graham Callaghan account and tweet on his behalf.
Graham, there's one way to stop this from happening.
Yeah, there is.
You know what to do.
There is.
You leave us no choice.
I can guarantee you, if you create one now, you'll have at least 100 followers by the end of the evening, I reckon.
You would. I definitely think you would.
From around Australia listening to this show.
People have been asking us, so we want Graham's insight and his witty banter.
No one wants mine.
Witty banter.
No, no one wants it. No,
you offer it willingly. We've seen your witty banter.
Lena again, zip it. There we go.
I have an explicit warning on my Twitter account, by the way. Just
have
in
you?
Case anyone's bothered by that kind of thing.
Okay.
An R
if
rating.
Going to follow me? Well, maybe not.
Yes,
R,
but don't have a warning about the volume, the
I do.
The sheer,
I'm very open
the
with
sheer
that.
Number.
I tweet a lot.
Oh, we know.
Yeah,
we know.
I discovered the 5 minutes I followed you, I got 8,000 tweets.
Oh, no, you didn't.
And you should never have the Telstra thing forward to your mobile as an SMS with Lena, because the phone just doesn't stop all day. Hey, just briefly, onto more like serious things before we go. Now, they're good tweets, Lena.
My mum thinks I'm cool. No.
No.
Well, get your mum in as a guest one night.
No?
All right. Just on a serious note before we go, you know, the other day we were saying, hope no one hacks. You're looking astonished. Is he really creating an account? Oh, stay tuned.
By the end of
the show, we could have an email address for a Twitter account for you
Twitter
all to follow.
Being born. Look.
It's beautiful.
It's a boy.
What one did you go? The pink one, the green one, the blue one, or the yellow one? The egg, that is.
I haven't got to that bit yet.
I'm still trying to fill in the little form.
Well, while you do that, it's a more serious... You know how the other week we spoke about all these people that have been hacking Sony of recent times and all that sort of stuff? And anyway, we laughed and jested about, hope no one has a go at Apple because they've got more data than they know what to do with. Well, someone's had a go at Apple.
Uh-oh.
During the course of the week, Internet vigilante hacker group Anonymous, now that they're back in the foray again after
LulzSec
decided to call it quits. There were too many feds after them, so they had to split up and go their own ways. But
well, I was like an 8-year-old in charge, wasn't it? I think I was a very young person in charge.
Probably a 14-year-old. They're normally at their peak of their career by the time they get to that sort of level. Anyway, Anonymous claimed to have broken into Apple servers and published a small number of usernames and passwords for one of the US technology's websites. Anonymous said last Sunday that via its account on the microblogging site Twitter, that Apple could be a target for hackers and release the data as part of its anti-security or anti-sec campaign. So the moral of the story is, good, strong, safe passwords and change them regularly.
For iTunes.
Yeah. And take a leaf out of Adam's book, move to 123 Fake Street. There'll be its own electorate there very shortly. It's got that many people moving into the newly formed suburb.
If you're purchasing stuff online in the iTunes store, Apple doesn't need to know where you live.
No, they just need to know what country you're in so they can geo-block you to certain stores.
They don't ship anything, they don't freight anything, they don't send anything by snail mail, so they don't need to know where you live.
Oh.
Protect your privacy.
I got lots
no
of other
one
things.
Else will.
I got lots of other things to talk about, but we've run out of time.
That can't
Look
be
at the
right.
Time.
That can't be right.
Oh, it is. Well, the clock's wrong. I was going to talk about Gartner. They're another survey. Because you know how we're
is
like
this
surveys
the mad minute?
The no. It's just what we could have talked about.
Fair enough, then.
Gartner was going to cast shadows on mobile banking. Their analysts for the financial sector has cast doubts on whether Australian banks should invest heavily in mobile banking apps. and the near-field
communications. No, they should invest heavily in competent web browser HTML developers.
There was also some talk about banks trying to block people using jailbroken or rooted phones from using mobile banking, which I thought was an interesting development.
Yes, I did see that during the course of the week.
You're probably reading the same news feed.
I was probably doing that, and I don't know whether I...
And he's lost his bit of paper. But that was the gist of the article anyway. It was just, I think, someone in the banking industry suggesting that it's something the banks might consider doing.
Yes, and I did read that. There's another one here that says earlier this week, the browser-based jailbreakme.com, they're the people that put holes in iPhone-y things, and lets you get onto the Cydia store and all that. Solution went live once again, bringing a simple new method of jailbreaking a number of iOS devices, including the iPad tool. The tool has proven popular with over 1 million users already having taken advantage of it. So there's a lot of people out there doing just that, Graham, jailbreaking phones. And if the banks say no... How would you know? Do you reckon you can interrogate a device to find out whether it's
possibly
rooted or jailbroken, depending upon which manufacturer you're using?
There'd have to be something in the browser ID that the browser sends back to the bank.
I guess. Don't know what, but nonetheless.
I must admit, I did wonder that same thing.
How they'd work it out. Maybe it's all bluff.
Could be.
Hotspot Gadget Website of the Week coming up after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
This is breakfast radio in some parts of the world.
He wanted to ring the police, but he wanted to do so anonymously.
Speaking of Qantas, it's what, you shoot special. Yourself in the face?
You shoot yourself in the face.
Dr. Ron, have you cyber squatted?
There are free tools to do most of these things.
I usually enjoy your podcast.
Oh, because the old iPad just
That's
like,
what the iPad's for.
Entertaining.
Put your fingers in the ears. La, 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 la.
Informative.
The consumer is the winner.
Independent.
You've got to find the sweet spot.
While listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, this thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole.
This week's gadget nominated by longtime listener TD. TD says the gadget this week should be the iPhone opener. OPENA. Two Australian men have designed an innovative iPhone gadget for beer lovers. Melbourne-based Chris Peters and Rob Ward's opener case for the iPhone 4 makes it simple to remove bottle caps from products like beer with its slide-out bottle opener. The opener case will soon become a commercial reality after the pair received enough money to create it via Kickstarter, which is a crowdfunding site that allows anyone to pitch in cash for an idea. The Melbourne pair plan to sell the opener for $39.95 and say it will ship in August. How good's that?
That's good. Sorry, I'm having microphone problems over here today.
Feeling a little off mic.
I am. It's a bit like you last week.
It was.
Hey, Warlock sent a really good one today on Google Plus in relation to the iPhone holder, the iPad holder, which makes it look like one of those arcade games type sort of thing, which I thought was really good. Maybe we can talk about that next week on the show.
We'll have to. What's this week's gadget, Andrew? The iPhone opener.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
If, like me, you have completely, utterly, irrevocably lost a remote control and you need to identify the replacement model, you can do two things. Firstly, you can buy a Logitech Harmony remote, but first, what I strongly suggest is have a look at this week's website, www.replacementremotes.com.
I do need a new remote for one of my Sony. The volume control's been lent on too much on one of the things and it down. Now I have to use a different one.
It started to wear, has it?
It has.
What this website does, replacementremotes.com, is it lists all known manufacturers of domestic TV, DVD, VCR, HDTV, audio, satellite and home theatre systems with details of the corresponding remote control.
Yeah.
It also has online user manuals for dozens of different brands. You can buy your missing remote control online.
Can you download the manual free of charge? I hate paying for a manual.
Some of them you can.
Because if you look hard and fast enough on the internet, you'll find it free of charge out there.
Some of them you can. Others you have to pay a small fee for. But have a look. It might help you out. Our website of the week, replacementremotes.com.
Woohoo! Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
All I have here is Google Plus for Android. See Andrew.
Okay. Yeah, we look, in our trials of using the Google new system, the actual app is quite a nice little GUI. It just brings it, the five icons, your streams and your friends and your circles, all that sort of stuff to the front. And if you've been playing and tinkering like we have, it's probably worth a download, and especially if you have a Google phone. If you have any other device, forget it. There is no app for it at this point in time, apart from the web browser contained in that their device. So you're stuck with the web-based GUI. But the actual Google app is really good, and you can get it from the App Store. And as we discovered in the office, you can just log on. You don't have to turn your phone on and just click it down, and it'll be on your phone next time you power it up or turn it on or whatever you want to do. It's very impressive, wasn't it?
It pushes it down to your phone. Yeah, it's quite clever, actually. Yeah, and it's very usable, very nice, simple, clean interface on the Android handsets.
Yeah,
so if you get a Google Plus invitation and you sign up, then
if you want one, ask us. We've got them. At the moment, it's on. Quick, that's while it lasts.
Our app of the week, Google Plus for Android.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
I've got an odd spot for you.
What's your odd spot?
It's Graham Callaghan's Twitter account. It's not the one you've got on the piece of paper there, but I think it's nearly ready. It's nearly... Has it been born yet?
True to form.
Yeah, it has?
Kind of on its way, yeah.
Okay.
I'm having trouble with the confirmation email. I think it's jammed in your spam filter.
Oh. Dr. Ron...
Would you like to make an announcement about the name, the account?
So everyone can follow it?
Yeah. GCTTR.
GCTTR.
Graham Callaghan, you heard it here first. Radio.
If you want to be the first to sign up before Graham even gets his confirmation email, off you go. What's the odd spot this week, Dr. Ron? Because we're running out of time.
A 39-year-old woman was arrested last week on board a train bound for Oakland, California.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to say Oakley, Victoria. But no. Not local?
No, not local. After refusing to wind up a 16-hour mobile phone conversation.
Lakeisha, oh, you're kidding me.
Lakeisha
what battery
Beard
lasts that long?
Was charged with disorderly conduct after she had an argument in a carriage of an Amtrak train with passengers who'd asked her to be quiet. The train was travelling from Oakland, California to Salem in Oregon when the woman lost her temper with staff who asked her to stop. The train itself was stopped and she was arrested for disorderly conduct.
For talking on the phone for too long. She must have been one of those loud people.
For 16 hours. She must have had it plugged in.
Absolutely.
Charging.
Or she had a big battery in her bag.
Yeah, or
not obviously a lithium.
Or something.
Yeah.
Several phones.
I find that amazing that people can actually talk on the phone. Who she was talking to? It probably doesn't go into detail. She probably made several phone calls to different people.
And what would you be talking about for 16 hours?
I don't know. Your mother? Your father?
Stuff.
Yeah, stuff. The girls. They can talk about anything for that long. You should know that, Dr. Ron, of all people.
Yes. Why should I know about that? I'm not a girl.
You're not?
No.
Oh, awkward.
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 Again.
Awkward moment.
Hash awkward.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Tech Talk Radio for this week. I think it's probably one of the coldest weeks down here where we are in the southern part of Australia. But it's been an achievement this week. We've finally got Graham Callaghan to create a Twitter account. And that account
And not just threatened to do it. He's actually done it before the show's finished.
Absolutely. We haven't even subscribed to him yet, so he's going to start tweeting.
He hasn't tweeted yet. He's got 5 followers.
No, I didn't. I created the... I didn't guarantee I'd
have 5 followers already? Gee whiz. He's off and running.
The account, Graham?
At GCTTR.
Oh, very good.
The pressure's on.
The pressure is on. And that's our show for the week. That's until the same time next week. Thank you very much to everyone who contributed to our show this evening.
Thank you to James Gardner for talking to us about digital cinema.
Yep, that was great. Thank you, James. Thanks for all the people that emailed us and came into the big night in the chat tonight. Thanks for everyone for trying out the Google Plus. Feecan's in there at the moment. She's and a few others there. Warlock's in there. This is the... what do you call it? The little room in...
The hangout.
Hangout, that's the word I was looking for.
The TikTok clubhouse.
Yeah. I think it struggles under a few video cameras. But nonetheless, we'll try it again next week. Hopefully the internet stays together. Thank you for Telstra for giving us broadband tonight. It was very kind of you.
Struggles on my netbook too, just quietly.
Yeah, well, time to upgrade. Until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Guest panellist is Justin Dunlop. Expert opinion by Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and the world that rebroadcast the show. And a reminder that Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. And don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk chat, and solve your tech issues in the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws, and may not be rebroadcast without approval.